Hello. In this session, I'm going to introduce you to the Meta model. The Meta model is a language pattern model designed to help you challenge non-specific language to uncover what it is specifically people mean and how that you can use then use that information to help them understand what's coming out of their unconscious, but also to improve the interaction between the two of you. So I'm going to take you through each of the patterns and explain what they are and what they mean, give you some examples and some way of challenging them. And then we'll look at using the challenges on a particular example that you may have seen already. So this is the bit that I always say has the government health warning attached to it, because when you challenge people's non-specific language, it can feel quite confrontational. So the way that we go about this is quite important. It will also help to change the way that you interact with people. So as you'll see as we go through it, we do need to be a little bit more careful, but I think it's really important to come from that position of positive intent that we've talked about before in the first place and use it to understand what's going on so that you can have a better outcome and move towards a better outcome. So I'll take you through each of the patterns. Again, this is the bit that people may generally have a lot of difficulty with on the course because it's very full of jargon. So it comes from linguistics. So there are linguistic language patterns in there. So are quite jargonized, but the more that you watch this, the more you read through the notes, the more you'll find that you can understand and get a better picture of what they all mean. So here we go. As we go through these meta model patterns, you'll notice that they're split into three main headings, and you'll probably recognize those from the NLP communication model. So there are certain language patterns that are distortions, there are some that are deletions, and there are some that are generalizations. So we're going to look at distortions first. And the first one is a mind read. So mind read is when you claim that you know what somebody is thinking or feeling. And this is usually just a reaction, an intuitive response to the way that somebody is talking to you and their body language. So this is when we say things like, I know what you're thinking, or yeah, and you're not happy with this, are you? Or, the example that we've got here is, you don't like me. Is that going to be accurate? Well, it might be, but it probably isn't a lot of the time. So what we need to be able to do is if someone says that, if someone says you don't like me, we need to be able to challenge it. And so we can challenge it with simply, how do you know I don't like you? Because what that does is it recovers the evidence that somebody has that makes them think that you don't like them. So, and it may be that actually, they don't even really think that themselves, but it's just part of that unconscious reaction to something that you've done or said. So, how do you know I don't like you? Challenges the statement, but it also challenges them to think about what it is that you're doing that's making them think that way themselves. So, if we can get that out into the open and we can explore that, we can probably move forwards in a much more effective way. So that's mind read. The next one is cause and effect. So this is when, if you think about the communication model, what we're saying here is that the way that you react to an external situation is about your reaction. It's about your beliefs, values, the stuff that goes on in your head. And so this is where people wrongly put the cause outside of themselves. So they blame something else for causing them to feel in a particular way. So here's an example. You make me sad. Now, if we remember the NLP communication model, you can't make somebody sad. What you do is you behave in a particular way. They interpret that external event. They filter it. They delete. They distort. In this case, they generalize. They think about their beliefs and values. And they create an internal representation or a perception that then leads them to change their state. So in reality, you can't make somebody sad. So to challenge that, you could say, how does what I'm doing cause you to choose to feel sad? Now, in reality, that is a good challenge to the statement of you make me sad. If you think about the communication model, how does what I'm doing, external event, cause you to choose perception and then state to feel sad, so state. The reality is that if you used that statement to somebody who said, you make me sad, you're likely to get into a fight over it. So I would kind of challenge that a little bit more in their world by saying, how am I making you sad? What is it that I'm doing that's making you sad? So that sort of challenge. The correct one, obviously, is how does what I'm doing cause you to choose to feel sad? But, you know, as I say, this is where the government health warning that I mentioned earlier comes into effect, really. And just think about that. So that's cause and effect. A similar one is what we call complex equivalence. So this is where two statements that are separate are linked together to become one. So an example of that would be, she's always yelling at me, she doesn't like me. So there's, if you think about that in terms of an equals sign in the middle, she's always yelling at me equals she doesn't like me. So the two of those statements aren't connected, but when you link them, it becomes a reality. And the be alert, whatever it is, be alert, control the virus, save lives, is a complex equivalence in that sense, because it is be alert equals control the virus, which equals save lives. So a challenge to that would be, how does her yelling at you mean she doesn't like you? Do you ever yell at somebody you do like, for example, would be another challenge. So that's a complex equivalence. The next one, presuppositions. So presuppositions are linguistic assumptions. So these assumptions that we make, and in some cases, they're really important assumptions. We have to make these presuppositions so that we can make sense of what somebody says. So, you know, quite a simple one would be that, oh, I came by car. Well, you've got to presuppose that they've got a car, or that they were in a car, or they've hired a car, to make sense of that whole statement. And I know that sounds a little bit picky, but it's an important thing to consider. So these are linguistic assumptions. And an example of that would be, when you get smart, you will understand this. So there's all sorts of assumptions in there. First of all, that somebody will understand it. There's also an assumption that you will get smart at some point in the future. So a challenge to that would be challenging those presuppositions. So how do you know I'll get smart? Or what does understand mean? And how will I understand it? Because there's a number of presuppositions in that whole sentence, that somebody can understand it, that I will get smart, and you have to be smart to understand it. There's all of those kind of presuppositions in there, and you can challenge any one of those to get a better understanding of the situation. Now let's move on to generalizations. And the first one is universal quantifiers. So this is when you generalize in a very broad way. So an example of these are, you know, things like always, never, everyone, no one. And we make those big kind of assumptions. And I don't know whether any of you remember Dot Cotton in EastEnders, but I remember many, many years ago, one memorable statement that she made was, no one never does nothing they don't want. No one never does nothing they don't want. And the universal quantifiers, I've never heard so many in one sentence before. And the point about this is that having that kind of universal quantifier, that perception of the world that's linked to that universal quantifier, can have a big effect on the way that you feel. So, you know, I remember my children saying, you know, would use universal quantifiers a lot when they were little. Oh, everyone else is going. No one else has got one of these. Everyone's going to fail. You always ask me to do that. You never let me do anything. Those kind of universal quantifiers. So, you know, a classic example of that is, you know, she never listens to me. So the challenge is quite straightforward. The challenge is just reflect back what they've just said as a question. So this is, in other terms, this is a reflective question. Never. So often that's enough. She never listens to me. Never. Everyone else is going. Everyone. And quite often people will, well, yeah, not never, or well, not everyone. Or you could also challenge that with, can you think of a time when she did? listen to you? Or even what would happen if she did? Because that starts to open up choices. And choices is really important in this one, because, you know, when my daughter would come home from school and says, you know, no one likes me at school, everybody hates me. And it's like, well, no one. Well, yeah, no one. Okay, well, what about Hannah? Well, okay, I suppose Hannah. And what about, and what about, and what about? And it turns out that one person has made a made a comment during the day that's upset her. And actually bringing that out of her unconscious into her conscious helps to change the way that she feels about the situation. So we can often use this kind of language to ourselves, which affects the way that we feel about the situation. And if we can challenge that or have someone challenge it for us, then that can uncover the reality, if you like, which also then affects state and makes us feel better than we did beforehand. And you'll hear these kind of universal quantifiers all the time, all the time. So, universal quantifiers. Modal operators of necessity. Have you ever said to yourself, I've got to do this, I have to, I can't stay late tonight? So these are things like must, mustn't, should, have to, got to. So necessity, meaning I've got to do something, it's necessary to do it. I must do it, I mustn't, I should, I have to, I've got to. I've got to stay late tonight is a classic example. Or I have to work late tonight. And what does this do? If you use this statement to yourself, how does that affect the way that you feel? I've got to work late tonight. I have to work late. So this will affect your internal state. And quite often, and when people are stressed, the thing that causes that stress is a feeling of being out of control, about being forced to do something by somebody else. So saying I've got to work late can make you feel quite stressed or anxious or angry or upset. How does that affect your behavior? Well, I suppose quite often if you're feeling stressed, you're not as productive as if you weren't. And maybe you would be resentful about having to work late, so you wouldn't work effectively because you were staying late. So the way to challenge that is to just say, what would happen if you didn't? I have to work late tonight. What would happen if you didn't? Well, I wouldn't get the work done tonight. And what would happen then? Well, actually, I work better in the mornings. I could probably get it done a lot more quickly in the morning. So that gives them the choice, because the choice then is to either go home and do it in the morning because you work better, or to stay late tonight and get it done so that you don't have to think about it in the morning. The point about that is that the outcome is the same. The work is done. But the more important outcome of that is that you've taken control, you've made a choice, and you've taken control of your situation. And because you've made that choice, you feel better about staying, because actually, I'm choosing to work late tonight sounds better than I have to work late tonight, and it makes you feel better. So it can help you to challenge other people and change their state as well as your own. So you can challenge your own language in this way. And modal operators of possibility. So the difference between necessary and it's possible. So possible or it's impossible. You can or you can't, or you will or you won't. So it's possible. There's a choice there. It might happen, it might not happen. So an example of that would be, I can't leave early. So although that's similar to I have to work late, I can't leave early is, it kind of opens up a bit of possibility. If you can't, you probably can as well. So the challenge to that is, what would happen if you did? Can't leave early. What would happen if you did? Very similar to the modal operator of necessity in terms of the challenge. And also, what is preventing you? What's stopping you from leaving early? Can open up that discussion. It helps somebody to explore what's going on in their mind, which is helping them to understand what's going on, which then opens up the choice, possibly. So that's modal operator of possibility. Another generalization is nominalization. So this is when you take a verb or a process word and you turn it into a noun. Lots and lots of examples of nominalizations, like communication or evolution, might sound familiar. So what we've done is we've taken the verb to communicate or to evolve, and we've turned them into nouns. And that can affects the way that people feel about the situation, because if you turn it into a nominalization, it becomes a reality rather than a process. So, for example, I've heard this lots and lots of organizations, there's no communication here. And that is, as a statement, is very limiting, because if there's no communication here, there's nothing we can do about it, essentially. Education doesn't work in this country, for example. So the way to challenge that is to turn it back into a verb, back into a process. So there's no communication here. Who is not communicating with who? What are they not communicating? How are they not being effective in their communication? So turn it back into a verb. So the nominalization, where you've taken a process or a verb and turned it into a noun, so it becomes a reality like a table, then turn it back into a process and challenge it in that way. And that can help you uncover the thoughts behind the idea that there's no communication here. And let's move on to look at unspecified verb. So quite simply, you use a verb, but you don't give any detail around it. So in this example, we've got, I helped Joe. I helped Joe do whatever it was he wanted to do. Now, that might be okay. You might just want to know that somebody's helped Joe. But what if you wanted to find out how they'd done that? So the point about this, to challenge it, is how specifically did you help Joe? So if there is an unspecified verb, how specifically did you do what you did? And that can help you understand the process that people use to get to that end point, and can help them understand as well, because sometimes that's important. I know I helped him, but I'm not quite sure what I did. Okay, so how specifically did you help? Oh, right. So we did this, then I did this, then we had this conversation, and so on and so on. So that's about unspecified verb. We've also got an unspecified noun, and this happens quite a lot. Can you get me a whatever? And I suppose the example here is, can you get me a table, please? And when you first heard that word table, what does that mean? And I suppose the example of this is the think of an elephant exercise you may have done, and understand everybody's elephant is slightly different or completely different. So can you get me a table, please? Could be, can you make a booking at my favorite restaurant for me? It could be, can you bring me a card table or a dining room table or a white plastic piece of furniture? Or can you get me a table, a spreadsheet? It could be the sales figures for next year in a spreadsheet, in a table. And of course, if you then bring a white plastic patio piece of furniture in, and what they were looking for was the sales figures for the next 12 months, well, there's a result that you probably don't want to repeat. So the challenge is, what specific table do you want, or which specific table do you want? Or even, what do you mean by table? So that's an unspecified noun, very similar to the unspecified verb, except obviously it's a noun. And then move on to deletions. And the first one is a simple deletion. So this is when you just missed things out. So the, you know, how did you get here today is a simple deletion around the word how, because you've edited an awful lot of information out of there. And I understand why you would just say, how did you get here today? Because if you don't delete information from your reply, then your reply is going to be something like, well, I woke up at 6 o'clock, the alarm went off, and I reached out and I pressed the alarm down, and you have to press it quite firmly because the button doesn't work very well. And then I swivel my feet out of the bed and I put my feet on the floor, and I always put my slippers there because the floor is quite cold in the morning. And then I got up and I walked and I opened the curtains, and it could take as long to describe how you got here today as it did to actually get here today. So we do delete information. We have to delete information from the conversation for it to make sense. But the problem is, how do we decide which bit we're going to delete? And this is why it's important to be able to challenge that deletion and challenge that language generally. So that's a simple deletion. So quite simply, you've just missed information from the sentence. So an example of that would be, I'm uncomfortable. Or, how did you get here today? So the challenge is quite simple in the sense that, how specifically are you uncomfortable? How specifically did you get here today? And that, how specifically did you get here today, might uncover lots of information that you weren't expecting and might take quite a long time. but it could be really useful as well. So we've got that word specifically, because what we're trying to do with this is understand what people mean exactly or specifically from the conversation, the language that they're using. So lack of referential index. This is when you use that ubiquitous word they. So they say. And the next one is very similar. There's a key difference between the two. So this one is the person making the statement is missing. So this is the they. So the example is they say it's going to rain tomorrow. And you've probably heard that a lot. And you've probably used that statement a lot yourself as well. But who does it make any difference? Is it important to understand who the they is? Well, it could be, because if the they in the statement is the Met Office, you might take more care about what you do as a result of hearing that information than if they is, oh, it's the blokes down the pub. On the other hand, and knowing how accurate the Met Office weather reports can be, you might take more store in what the bloke down the pub has said rather than the Met Office. So understanding who the they is can make a big difference in terms of you understanding exactly what's meant. So the challenge is, who says it's going to rain tomorrow, or according to who, or even just who are they? But again, how you challenge it can make a difference. We'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. So that's a lack of referential index. A very similar one, which is a lost performative, in that the person who's saying the statement is left out. The difference being that this is about a value judgment. This is about making a level of importance to something or a level of value to it that's missing. So in this, the example I've got here is they say it's going to be a horrible day tomorrow. So is horrible day tomorrow different than it's going to rain tomorrow? Yeah, because it's going to rain tomorrow is just a statement of fact in the sense of it will rain or it won't. And they say it's going to be a horrible day tomorrow is about a judgment. So depending on what you want to do, let's say horrible means it's going to rain, it's going to be windy tomorrow, but actually I want to go out sailing tomorrow, so it's really important that there's some wind. Or, you know, horrible meaning it's going to rain or it's going to be really hot or whatever it may be. So again, this is about how we interpret that word horrible and make a judgment ourselves based on what someone else has said. So to challenge it, quite simply, who says it's going to be horrible tomorrow? And what does horrible mean? How is it going to be horrible? So we want to understand who, because that kind of gives it some legitimacy or doesn't. But we also, it would be good to understand what horrible actually means. So that's lost performative. We have a comparative deletion, which we see quite often in advertising, and that's when you compare something to something else. So something is better than, or it's worse than, compared to something that you don't actually put the detail in. So we're missing the compared to what. So for example, new dad's wash is whiter. So you could say compared to what, or new dash is whiter compared to what. So the challenge there is about the comparison, the bit that you've deleted, the bit that's missing out of the statement. So those are the meta model patterns, and there's quite a lot of them. As you can see, they might on the surface of it appear quite complex. There are lots of challenges for different things, so I suggest you look at the notes and or watch the video back again to reacquaint yourself with those patterns. So how can we use them? I mean, you know, we've used examples there about you can challenge your daughters around everyone's going to the party tonight, or everybody else has got a mobile phone when it turns out actually only one person has, or no one likes me, which can help them feel better. Or we've got the compared to what challenges, you know, you're much better compared to what, or compared to who, or it's good to talk according to who. So there's lots of ways that we can challenge those language, but for what purpose? And I guess that's the key question. So here's an example. Let's look at this statement from earlier on. So things can only get better. Tony Blair and the Labour Party in 1997. So if we look at those different meta model patterns and we look at things, based on what we've just talked about there, what do you think things are in terms of a meta model violation in that sense? Well, that's an unspecified noun, because what things are you talking about? What specifically can only get better, which would be a good challenge to that. Or can only get better. So we've got a modal operator of possibility there. Can only get better. So can only is a universal quantifier. Get, unspecified verb. And better, which is a comparative deletion. And then if we look at the whole thing here, well, who said that? Is it a value judgment or a statement? Well, can only get better, I guess, is a value statement. So that then becomes a lost performative. So we can challenge every word. Every word? Yes, every word on that one statement. So how do we decide which one we're going to challenge? Or do we challenge all of them? And, you know, as an interviewer, I guess it would be really useful to be able to challenge each element of that statement. And of course, lots of interviews don't challenge, and there's all sorts of reasons for that. So we could challenge a lot of language, but we have to be aware of it first. Because how many times have you seen that statement and not really thought anything of it at a conscious level? At an unconscious level, you will have done, but at a conscious level, you probably haven't. So we could challenge every one of those words there. And, you know, I suggest that you have a look at various bits of writing that you see, look at slogans particularly, and challenge them at a conscious level. So what's that? Because you know, we take in particularly the government slogans, and the Conservative Party is very, very good at three-word slogans. And, you know, if you think about it, there's lots that came out during the COVID pandemic. So we need to choose which ones we're going to challenge. And the way to do this is to think about one of those key processes of NLP. The key process that I'm thinking of is this one: outcome, sensory acuity, flexibility. And the key to deciding what you're going to challenge is to be very clear about the outcome that you're looking for. So what is it I'm trying to get out of this conversation or this interaction with somebody? And that's going to help me decide what it is I'm going to challenge. So, for example, if what you're really interested in when you're talking to the Labour Party in 1997 is exactly what they're going to do to make things better, then you challenge the word get. So how specifically are they going to get better? If you're really interested in understanding what it is that they're focusing on, then you would challenge things. So what things specifically? Or if you're really interested in understanding their thinking about comparing themselves to other parties, then compared to what? Better compared to what? So you might only challenge one of those words instead of all five of them. But you have to choose exactly which word you're going to challenge based on what it is that they're looking for in terms of an outcome. And how you challenge becomes really important as well. So, you know, I do, as I said before, this has a government health warning. It's the only tool in NLP that I know of that I will give a government health warning. And that's because once you start to realize that you can challenge people, then it's like a new toy, or it was with me. It was like a new toy, and I would challenge everything. Everything? Yes, everything that somebody said, to understand exactly what they meant by it. And as you can imagine, if everything that you say, everything, yes, everything, is challenged by somebody else, it gets a bit annoying after a while. And that's what happened. So the people around me, particularly my family, as I was experimenting with this, got a bit annoyed, to say the least. So I kind of took that on board, and so I stopped doing it. But I started to really kind of become aware of it, but not say anything, which was really worse, because I'd have this kind of smug little grin on my face. So, yeah, you just said something that I could challenge then. So be aware of it. It's important that you start to recognize the words that you can challenge. So, you know, listen to people, watch people on the TV, listen to what people say. I'm very visual. So for me, it's almost like one of those old-fashioned cash registers that you kind of press the buttons down. And when somebody says something, whether that's a universal quantifier or a cause and effect or whatever it may be, there's this little ka-ching, and a little card pops up in the window of the cash register that says modal operator of possibility, whatever it is. That's a bit weird, but it works for me because it helps me to recognize the metamodel patterns that people are using that I can challenge. And that gives me the choice then to challenge them or not, depending on the outcome that we're looking for. And you can soften these by, I'm wondering what would happen if you did, rather than what would happen if you did. And so the way that you challenge is quite important in terms of tone of voice and trying to soften the challenges. But just be aware of those challenges to start with. I remember being in a pub in the north of England one summer. I met up with a guy I used to work with, and we were both NLP master practitioners at the time. And we walked into the pub and we were stood at the bar to get a drink. And while we were waiting for the drink, the barmaid, there was a Daddy Longlegs flew in through the window, and she kind of panicked and was running around to get away from this thing. And it followed her up and down the bar. And then eventually it flew out of the window again. And she came up to the bar and said, I'm really sorry about that. Every time I see one of those, they always bite me. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever been bitten by a Daddy Longlegs, but I know I never have. And Tony looked at me and we kind of looked at each other and he said, shall I or shall you, you know, in terms of challenge what she said. And that's what I said, I'll leave it to you. And he said, every time you see them, they always bite you. That must be terrible. And we walked away. And we looked back as we walked away and you could see her behind the bar going, every time, challenging her own language and sort of becoming aware of the reality that, you know, maybe you'd never been bitten by it. I don't know. So you can challenge quite often just by reflecting back what somebody has said to you. Although having said that, when we talked about the universal quantifier, you know, you never take me anywhere. If you're doing that, if someone says that to you in the middle of an argument and you say never, I would suggest that ducking is probably a good idea. So be aware of the power of this as a way of challenging and getting information out of people that can help you with the interaction, but can also help them understand their own internal state and maybe modify it. It's a really, really powerful tool. And so it does have that government health warning. Practice it, be aware of it, but also be aware of how it can seem quite antagonistic depending on how you approach the way you challenge somebody. So soften those challenges as much as you can do. And good luck with it. Look forward to seeing you the next time when we talk about the opposite of this, which is the Milton model.